What happens to families and relationships when a loved one faces an illness or health challenge, be it mental or physical?
To be sure, no one is immune. Disease impacts people of all ages, educational and income levels, and cultures. Today on Real Family Talk, we'll take a look at what happens when illness joins the family.
Everyone will either experience illness at some point in our lives or will have a family member, a mother, a father, a spouse, a sibling, a friend, or a coworker receive a difficult diagnosis. Marilyn Riley knows firsthand when illness joins the family. Thank you so much, Marilyn, for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.
Tell us what happened. What was your experience?
Okay, I've got to say that my husband actually began having arthritis when he was 13 years old. And when he became an Adventist, he started learning about taking something, medicine, to help that. And I married him, and his arthritis progressed. And different things happened that went wrong concerning the medications he was taking and his arthritis going to more parts of his body. And pretty soon it was all over his body. And
arthritis can be pretty crippling as far as being immobilizing to your daily activities.
Yes, he forged onward. He just kept going forward. And it wasn't until his last few years that he was in a wheelchair, many times at home when just needing to do something, he would just stay in the wheelchair because that it made it easier. And the kids and I would help him do things and function.
So I'd like to ask, at what point in your marriage, how many years had you been married when it became chronic?
I'm going to say, I don't know. You know, that time when it becomes more difficult is hard to determine because it's something that you accommodate always. I mean, we never did camping or anything that had much walking in it.
So from the very beginning of your marriage, I'm hearing you say, he had some challenges.
Absolutely.
And so you had to adjust your life and some of the activities in your life to accommodate his illness.
That's exactly right. There were a lot of things I just didn't do and a lot of things we didn't do together that other people were talking about and shared with us. But we just did not do that. Anything with any physical anything in it.
How many children did you have?
We had two.
You had two children, and boy, girl?
Two sons.
Two sons.
5 years apart, they share the same birthday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's some serious family planning there.
Yes, exactly.
But so that must have been difficult because boys are very active, and they want to run, and they want to play, and they want to be outside. How did that impact your boys' lives?
I can't speak for them, but they were at school, they were at church, they were doing things in after day care. They had friends in the neighborhood, and they did such things there, went out and played. So
let me ask, when they were school age, perhaps 6, 7, 8, did he play ball with them? Was he able to do any of these things that dads do with their sons?
No.
Not at all?
No.
So they didn't have the opportunity to...
Excuse me. I'm going to take that back. He didn't do that around the house. However, he was a co-leader of a pony league team. He was a co-coach.
Okay.
And he couldn't get out there and throw balls or anything like that. But he could always, I called him a work director, because he could always sit down in a chair and tell people what to do and do it with enthusiasm, and they would do it. Well, he was a real good leader.
That's wonderful. So he found ways to get involved in his boys' lives, even though he wasn't able to throw the ball, he could direct from the sidelines.
That's it, yes, that's right, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more, though, about how you feel it impacted your own marriage and what eventually happened to him.
Okay, it impacted our marriage in that I'm a physical person, and I cut back on that. I just cut back on any thoughts of doing anything physical, hiking, camping I'm not real game for, but hiking I can do, physical I can do. So. And that was difficult. But you know, when you love someone, you know, you just go all out for them. And so it was like, okay, this is what we do. I can do that.
So there was a new normal with you.
Correct. Thank you. Thank you.
So your normal life became a different normal life than the one that you envisioned.
Exactly. Thank you. That's exactly right.
Because I can see how something like that, though, might lead someone to feel resentful that they're not able to do some of the things that they used to do or that other people are doing. But what I'm hearing you say is that there were sacrifices that you were willing to make.
Yes, you know, and I never even thought about that because he was very sociable, and I'm more of an introvert. So he was our social person and set up, you know, opportunities to get together and set up times to get together with families who had kids our age, too, so that they could go out and do stuff. And thank you for bringing that up, Elaine, because that's... Yeah, he did other things that made up for it. And I didn't really think about missing anything.
So in your case, he, in essence, kind of took responsibility for filling the gaps where his illness created some challenges for your family.
Yes, and he was in command, so he could make those opportunities ones that he could deal with, you know, physically.
So how long did it take? How long had you been married when your husband finally died, I guess?
Okay, we had been married 24 years.
24 years, so that's a long time.
And what actually happened was he woke up one morning having a hard time breathing, and he had developed a blood clot in his lungs, and he had a stroke.
Okay.
And so when he went to the hospital, I don't know that they could do any one thing that would make the other worse.
Better or worse.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's what actually happened.
So I'm hearing you say it wasn't a prolonged illness at this point when it became chronic. It went quickly?
Correct. Do you know, that was our prayers. He never wanted to be bedridden. He never wanted to go blind. I never wanted him to develop another illness that would just top whatever he was doing and then have that be for a long time. He woke up one morning, and then 3 hours later,
he was gone.
Oh. Well, we're sorry about that. But it sounds like in spite of his chronic illness, you had a very fulfilling life and a fulfilling marriage. And we're so thankful that you came on and shared your story with us, Marilyn. Next, we'll meet a therapist who says when someone is ill, it's as if there's a new member of the family. We'll talk about that after these messages. Here's a quote from the World Health Organization about illness. Where there is neglect, there is little or no understanding. Where there is no understanding, there is neglect.
Dr. Mayuri Pandit joins us now. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. Her focus is on how physical and mental illness impacts families. Welcome, Dr. Pandit.
Thank you.
We're so delighted you're with us.
Thank you.
So, I have a question for you. Why do you say illness joins the family?
That's a great question. I've been working with families who have both a physical diagnosis and a mental diagnosis in the family. And oftentimes, it's like an uninvited intruder that came to stay and just never left. Mm-hmm. Because what you do is impacted by this illness, where you go, how your time is managed, all the things that make daily life work are impacted by this illness. It's like another family member.
So it takes over
sitting
your life.
With you. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, so how does it impact families? I mean, you shared a little bit about this intruder. That's such an interesting analogy to use. But what specifically is happening to these families?
So we've got different stages that they're trying to get through, maybe having kids, maybe getting them through school, maybe launching them into their own careers. And if they don't have kids, maybe they're trying to get their life together, get work together, get family. I mean, all those areas get impacted when you're trying to deal with this big uninvited guest or intruder.
So give us an example of a family that you've worked with, of course, without sharing names, but the specific illness that you've treated.
I can remember there was one family where the wife had a husband who had both scoliosis and major depressive disorder, so both a physical and a mental illness. And it was to the point where she looked like she was the one who wasn't doing well. Everything about him was what she focused on, the treatments, the doctor's appointments. They didn't have time to even go to church sometimes.
So it impacted every aspect of her life.
It impacted every aspect of her life. And and watching your loved one going through something is hard enough. But when you're the one going through it, and then your loved one has to take care of you, you feel like a burden. Mm-hmm. You feel like they got so much to do because of you.
What about their lifestyle? How does it impact their lifestyle? Perhaps, what does it do to their finances?
Oh, that's a big one. Finances are a big one. I worked with kids a lot. Mm-hmm. And kids who have illness, it can be really heartbreaking. Because then they feel like mom and dad have to pay so much for my treatments. Maybe if I don't go to school, then they won't have to worry about that.
So there's a certain amount of guilt.
Absolutely.
That the ill person, the sick person feels.
Yes. And then when you see your loved ones doing the bills and going through it, and sometimes healthcare can be ridiculously expensive.
And the copays are getting bigger and bigger.
And they are getting bigger, and it drains the funds for anything fun to do. So they feel guilty even asking for the regular things, much less something, a fun outing or going out to eat.
So I'm getting the feeling that sometimes you're dealing with much more than just the fact that they're ill. You're dealing with how to help them cope with the financial realities.
Yes, absolutely.
Depression, perhaps.
Worry.
Yes.
Being creative about how we do fun things and add fun into this lifestyle where we have this intruder.
Yeah, so I'm curious to know, so you treat the entire family. So who refers these families to you? How do they know that this is a service that you provide?
So oftentimes when I make relationships with the doctors, the healthcare professionals, whether it's a clinic, a private clinic, or a hospital setting, they'll refer patients to me who are either non-compliant or the family seems to be really struggling with letting the healthcare professionals do what they need to do. So that's where a lot of the referrals come
from. So you're helping this family manage the illness,
yes,
how to cope with it, with this intruder that has joined their family.
Yes.
So what is it that people need to know about illness, about just the whole structure of it? You know, what do we need to understand so that our viewers understand why you're calling this thing an intruder?
I think the biggest thing I would say is we need to understand how to put illness in its place, because we can swing from one end to the other, one end being that illness takes over every single aspect of the family life, and the other being we pretend that it doesn't exist.
So I'm hearing you say keep it in perspective?
Keep it in perspective.
Yeah,
and give it its rightful place.
Exactly.
And that could be?
And that could be... That could be where you recognize that this thing may not be going away, but we're not going to have it, let it have so much power that we have no life outside of it.
Wow. It's very interesting what you're saying. Our previous guest spoke about her husband suffering from chronic arthritis.
Yes.
But I actually loved what she was saying, which was that her husband recognized his illness, and he took a certain amount of responsibility for making up, for filling the gaps where he couldn't go out and play ball with his boys, but he could coach from the side. So when you speak with your families, is that something that you might help them with? Or, you know, share with us what some of the other suggestions that you may have for your families who are dealing with illness.
So it really takes a certain amount of creativity. And sometimes when you're stressed out, it's hard to think creatively.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I remember we really helped with is we had a young lady that was in a wheelchair. And so she couldn't really go out and play and really interact with other kids. So she just isolated herself from the other kids a lot. And she just kind of stayed in her room, and she started even isolating from her parents. And one of the things that they were able to help her do was to, she loved music. And they helped her kind of learn a little choreographed thing. It's called a cup song. And she was able to learn that and then teach it to other kids.
So she was doing something with her hands?
Mm-hmm.
The hands
yeah.
were choreographing?
Yeah, a choreographed little dance with her hands and cups to make a beat.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say that it's not all or nothing.
Yeah.
That you need to find a way to, well, what can we make out of this situation?
Yes.
Make the best out of it. Because after all, it's impacting your mental health.
Yes, it is.
And that's something that you want to be careful about.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this, talking about the mental health is very important, because what I see your energy and your excitement, and I'm sure that your families are, they have no choice but to do what you ask them to do.
Yes.
Because your brain, in many cases, is not affected. If you have cancer, your brain still functions, or this young lady who was in a wheelchair, certain parts of her brain might be affected, but she can still do a little dance with her hands or whatever. So how do you help people, though, with the depressive side, the depressive moods that they're dealing with?
That is something that can get really difficult, especially for the family members who are watching it and who feel very helpless, that there's nothing they can do to put a smile on their loved one's face. But one of the creative ways that we often talk with our family members to do is we talk to them about being able to find the ways and spaces to be together.
Okay.
So isolating is a huge part of that disorder, and it just perpetuates the loneliness, and it's a vicious cycle. Yeah. So being together, finding ways to be together, is really important.
That's wonderful counsel. We're going to get more from you when we come back. How can we navigate and maintain healthy friendships and family relationships when a loved one is ill? Next, we'll share three helpful strategies and tools you can use in your relationships right now. Stay with us. In 9 years of practicing marriage and family therapy, Dr. Mayuri Pandit has seen how both mental and physical illness impacts families.
Just before we go to those three items that we're going to be talking about, I'd like to ask, how do we relate or talk to people who are ill? Because people often don't know what to say.
Yes.
Or how to do so.
Yeah. You know, there's things not to do and then there's things to do. I'll just mention one not to do. Yeah. Not to say anything like, you know, well, the things happen for a reason.
Oftentimes
people think, well, did I do something? Mm-hmm. And then things to say are things like, I'm here if you need anything.
Wonderful.
I'm not going anywhere. Because people who are dealing with illness feel like...
need to be reassured.
Yes, they're contagious. Or they, you know, nobody wants to be around them.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, how they isolate themselves.
Yes.
And when people say, I'm here, they should actually be there.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, don't say, I'm here, and then you never show up.
Yeah.
You know, because it's very challenging for the person. Like, they take your word for it.
Yes.
The follow-up is, how does illness affect one's faith in God?
You know, I've had several families who are angry, mm-hmm. who are just angry because they feel like they did things right. They were healthy in their diet. They followed God's plans. And this is how God repaid them.
They married the right person. Mm-hmm. They waited until they got married mm-hmm. before they had children. And what's happening to me mm-hmm. now?
Kind of like Job.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah. Right.
You know,
exactly.
had a beautiful wife, had riches, had
yes.
all of these things.
Yeah. And then there's the other side where they haven't lived a right life and they feel like God is punishing them.
Yes.
And then there's so much guilt mm-hmm. and shame. So those two perspectives, there's quite a bit of.
So you get to do quite a bit in trying to help them come to grips
yes.
with a balance
yes.
on how to deal with these issues.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it sometimes more challenging to counsel with people who are people of faith because of those two reasons?
Yes, because they'll find those verses, you know, those verses that kind of back up the punishment
right,
angle.
Right, yes.
And even if they're not meant to be about punishment,
no,
they find
not.
A way to bring them in.
Yes.
So you spoke about three strategies.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
So the first one I talk about is externalize. It's an MFT, marriage and family therapy
yes.
term. And it's about being able to separate the person from the illness. So when I'm frustrated about the treatment or the doctor's plan, appointments and things like that, that's separate from being frustrated with my loved one.
Yes.
So being able to separate the two is really important.
And you're saying that the spouse, the children, someone needs to... the people who are closest.
Yes.
To make that separation, that
yes.
distinction.
And it's a very intentional thought in my mind. I'm upset or I'm irritated or I'm annoyed, but not at this person. It's at the illness. So let's not even...
That makes sense.
Yeah, let's not even go there.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very important. It's very difficult for people,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're not used to doing that.
Yeah.
And so that's probably a skill that you have to teach people to do, to not just look at the person and see cancer.
Yes.
Even the person that's ill, though, mm-hmm. also, because then they also look at themselves, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And they just see themselves as the illness.
The illness
yes. I had a patient do a picture of what her illness was. And it was a self-portrait of herself.
Oh, my. Oh,
just a very kind of grotesque picture of herself. And she showed me and she said, this is my illness. And I said, but that's you. And she said, we're the same.
Yeah.
So helping her pull that apart was her journey. And it was...
Externalized. That's
helpful.
Excellent.
Yes. External.
Okay, so what's the second one?
The second one is to be really express that love, that patience. You know, on the basic level, we need food, water, safety.
Yes.
We need love and attention just as much.
I am here. Yes.
It's that basic need. So our loved ones get to use that when they're feeling helpless, when there's nothing else they can do. They can express that patience, express that compassion, even express boundaries. To know that we're not going to let this illness overtake us, and we're going to really try to have a healthy family as best as we can.
Because you're having children, and children are growing up and going to school, and all these things are happening
mm-hmm.
in the midst of this illness.
Yes.
So we can't just let it take over our lives. We have to put it in its right place.
Right.
So express love, express concern, and talk about it. What I'm hearing you say is don't keep it inside and allow it to overwhelm you.
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing you say.
That's really critical, yeah, too, because what we know is that many marriages fall apart or experience extreme distress and ultimately divorce when there's an illness in the family. So externalize, express love. That seems really critical.
Yes.
What's your third one?
The last one is enrich. And that's about the self-care.
Of course.
So when you're a loved one watching someone struggle, it is tough. It's tough. And you can get so wrapped up in the tasks, in the daily things that you have to do for the illness, that you forget about taking care of yourself, going for a walk, making sure you take that bath, finding time to socialize for yourself.
Yeah.
People feel guilty about leaving their loved ones, so it's hard.
Yeah, I just met a woman this past Sabbath who has been a caregiver for her husband who has Alzheimer's. And I told her I was so happy to see her at this potluck.
Yes.
And she said, yes, my family forced me to take a respite, which is a break that you take from caregiving. And she didn't want to do it because she even said,
guilt
I just
associated
feel so
with it.
Guilty leaving him.
Yes.
But they actually pushed her and she was doing it. And she looked so refreshed.
Yes.
So it's very important, right, to enrich yourself. But what about the ill person?
You know, if I can go back to that story of that couple where she almost looked as bad as him, we worked with her on her self-care. And she started doing things on her own and she started looking better. And at the end of treatment, it was so interesting because he felt like less of a burden knowing that she was
that
taking care of herself. And he felt like this illness was more manageable because she was taking care of herself.
So it's all a matter of how you approach it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, put it in its place.
Yes.
It's not all or nothing.
Yes.
I'm not the illness. I'm ill, but I'm not the illness itself. Like the painting that you spoke about. I thought that was so poignant, you know, that people are able to make a distinction between the illness and themselves, because there is an essential self that's there, and that's different than the illness.
Now, we're told that you have some Bible verses that you like to use to help your families, if they choose, to integrate faith into their therapy.
So if I have a family member that really finds comfort in the Bible, then I like to use them because there's so many comforting verses.
Indeed.
And one is about God's, you know, grace being sufficient.
Oh, the one in 2 Corinthians.
Yes. Yeah.
Chapter 12 and verse 9.
Yes. And about our weakness being made perfect in His strength.
So we're weak, but God is strong.
Yes.
And we're not alone. And God is reminding us that His grace, which is a gift, is sufficient.
Is sufficient. And we don't need to be strong. There's no expectation to be strong. We don't need to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps.
God is being strong for us.
God will be strong.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
What's another one, real quickly?
Another one that I really like is about, now if you could.
Coming boldly before
coming
God.
Coming boldly.
One in Hebrews.
Yes.
Chapter 4 and verse 16.
Chapter 4 verse 16. Now, coming boldly, I like that word. And I use that word with my families a lot. Being confident that you can get the strength you need from God.
That.
And He's not going anywhere, even if it doesn't feel like it. We make a choice to believe that He is there.
So God is here.
Yes.
Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Pandit, for being with us. That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. Meanwhile, to watch more of Real Family Talk, please visit our website at hopetv.org/realfamilytalk.